I want to finish up talking about Birchas Kohanim. There's one thing I want to add to what we learned yesterday about Birchas Kohanim. It's a sugi to itself. We know that Birchas Kohanim has two parts. Actually reciting the bracha, the 15 words, the Yivarechacha Hashem Yishmerecha. And then there is the posture. The person is required to put his hands out and bless the Kohanim. The question is this the this what?
Bless the people.
Bless the people. Bless the people. This requirement for the Kohen to extend his hands towards the Tzibur, is that an ikor or is just an enhancement of the mitzvah? Is it the primary, you know, the Kohen does not fulfill the mitzvah unless he actually extends his hands out when he says the words, he says the words Yivarecha, or no? He doesn't have to fulfill the mitzvah. All he needs to do is to say the words. It's just a hiddur. Vayisa Aaron es yadav. Aaron lifted up his hands. Vayivorech es ha'am, and he blessed the people. It's not an absolute requirement. Yeah. Okay, then there's a way to put their hands. There's a tradition, and only if you're a Kohen are you able to bend your hands like this. It's not true. People who are not Kohanim can do it. People Kohanim, there are people who are Kohanim also can't do it.
Right.
Okay. You hold your hands down. You hold your hands up. Okay, but the exact position of the hand is certainly not ma'akev.
Except for the fact that it has to be.
The question is extending the hands out.
You know, a Kohen has a defect, let's say a mark or something on his hands. He's not able to feel this with his hands.
Not today.
So if the defects that they establish, a dye or something on the hand, it's not marked, then you can do it without it.
That's the question. So everyone agrees that a Kohen who cannot raise his hands, Zokain, or someone who's not well, that does not have the physical strength to raise his hands when he says the words, is not allowed to dochen. Because Chazal, the Rabbanon, if you learn that it's not ma'akev, they went so far, Chazal went so far to say that it may not be part, even more than that. You know, kol abila, when it comes to bila, there it means it's a chelik of the mitzvah. But here, even if you're going to learn that it's not a chelik of the mitzvah, it's just a hiddur, Chazal insisted that it be done the right way. If you're not going to do it the right way, then don't bother doing it. So that is a given. Even if whether you learn that it's part of the mitzvah or it's not part of the mitzvah, Kohanim must extend their hands forward when they recite Birchas Kohan. But the question is it a chelik of the mitzvah or not a chelik of the mitzvah? Lemai nafkamina. Number one, when does the Kohen make the bracha? We have a rule. Every bracha is recited over liasiyosin. If we learn that the extending of the hands, the chelik of the mitzvah, the proper time to make the bracha will be before they extend their hands. They should stand facing the Aron HaKodesh. They should keep their hands down, make the bracha Asher Kiddushanu B'Kedushaso Shel Aaron V'Tzivanu Levarech Es Amo Yisrael B'Ahava, and then raise their hands and turn around, or they can turn around and raise their hands. But the bracha would be made before they raise their hands, because if the Iker mitzvah is to raise, it's part of the mitzvah to raise their hands, the bracha should be made over liasiyasan before they raise their hands. If you learn that it's not a chelik of the Iker mitzvah, it's an enhancement to the mitzvah itself is to say the words, so then if they were to first make the bracha and then raise their hands and then say the words, it would be over de over. The term is over de over, it's two steps removed, which is too far, and that is not proper. Halachul ma'is machloikis. There are different customs. The more prevalent custom is first to raise their hands. They raise their hands and they make the bracha when their hands are being raised, which seems to indicate that it's not a chelik of the Iker HaMitzvah. And then after they finish the bracha, they turn around. That is the more prevalent minuk, but there are definitely Kohanim that have the custom not to raise their hands, first to say the bracha, then to raise their hands and to turn around, because they hold that the raising of the hands is the Iker chelik of the mitzvah itself. Now to prove this svar that it is a Iker chelik of the mitzvah, we can bring right from the Gemara, from Shulchan Aruch, where the halacha is, if a Kohen Rachmana Litzlan murdered another human being, killed, even not murdered, even inadvertently, accidentally killed another human being, well, so the halacha is not supposed to duchen. He's not supposed to duchen because Ein Kategar Nase Sanegar. The hands that were used to take the life of another human being should not be the hands that are instrumental in bringing bracha to cloud Yisrael. But if the raising of the hand is not the Ikar Mitzvah, the Ikar Mitzvah is the Bracha, is the reciting of the words, so what do the hands have to do with what has happened? He may have used his hands to take the life of someone else, but that's not what the Ikar Mitzvah is. The Ikar Mitzvah is to say the Bracha. Why should it be an Ikov in reciting Birchas Kehanim? The fact that it is an Ikov in Birchas Kehanim seems to be an indication that it's an Ikar Chelik of the Mitzvah itself. And that means the Bracha should be made before the hands are being raised, and we understand why. If someone was stunned, it was a loss of life, a Kohen would not be allowed to Duchen. And by the way, there are a lot of rules. That's not so simple. When a Kohen causes someone to die, there are many, many rules, many variations, and many problems. In most cases, it's mutter. Has to be done b'mezit l'chatchila. I mean, in order to prevent it from duchening, it has to be done b'mezit. And he didn't do tshuva. If a kohen, even if he did it b'mezit and did tshuva, some learn. If he goes, what does it mean doing tshuva? It's spiritual. What does it mean doing tshuva? He goes to the cemetery with 10 people. He goes to the victim with 10 people, and he asks for mechila. That already, according to some rishonim, is enough to allow the kohen.
Why should he be better than the other people?
What?
Why should he
be better? Is for a shaygeik. Someone who kills someone with shaygeik, that's a separate halach, he goes to Ari Miklat. He was talking about duchening.
But he can't duchen also.
If he goes to Ari Miklat, why not? Ari Miklat,
even if you have a car accident and a car kills someone in the car.
Okay, that's another opinion. So there are many varied opinions of what about even an accident, not even a guy, a non-Jew. Can you imagine? If a Jew kills a non-Jew, according to some opinions, also he should not duchen anymore because he caused the loss of life. Ain kategor. The hands that cause loss of life cannot be instrumental in bringing bracha. Okay, all of this touches upon the same. How far do you go? B'mezid, b'shegeik, a Jew, a non-Jew, but Eretz, or a soldier. So all the Paiskim Paskim, Rav Yosef, Peroshim, they all Paskim, Mutal Chatchila. It's a mitzvah. Everyone agrees that if a person, the classic example is if a Moil, Rachman Lislan, caused a child to die during Mila. He's doing a bris Mila, and the baby suddenly dies while he does the bris milah. Today, could you imagine what a scandal that would be? But if that's how the kohen happened, the moil happens to be a kohen, is he allowed to continue duchening for the rest of his life? The answer is absolutely yes, because the baby died in his hands at the time of a mitzvah. There's no greater mitzvah than defending Eretz Yisrael. So if a soldier who is a kohen kills a terrorist, or an enemy combatant, there is no issue whatsoever. L'chatchila, he's allowed to proceed raising his hands in Birchas Kehanim. Okay, now another issue, just there's an interesting Lomish question that touched upon raising of the hands. It says in Taisis, or maybe it says in the Gemara, the reason why a person who kills someone else is not allowed to raise Duchen is because of the concept of Ein Kategar Nase Sanegar. Hands that were a Kategar, were acted as an accusing angel, cannot be an advocate. Problem is, this concept of Ein Kategor Nase Sanegar is only said inside the Kodesh HaKodashim. Why does the Kohen Gadol not enter in the Kodesh HaKodashim wearing on Yom HaKippur, wearing the big day Zav? Because Zav was used for the Egel. So since it was used Egel, Ein Kategor, what is serving as an accusing angel against us, cannot serve now in Yom Kippur as an advocate on our behalf. You're not allowed to blow shofar with a shofar that is plated with gold. Why? So the Gemara says, Ein kategor nase sanegar. The Gemara asks the question, but the shofar is not being blown inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it's being blown in the Beis HaKnesses. So the Gemara says a fascinating answer, Kevan de lezicharon kasi kilifnim damya. Since when we blow the shofar, it caused Hashem to be reminded of us, it brings our zikara and our remembrance before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's as if we are inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now, if that's true, we have a problem. Because l'chayra, no one is of the opinion that when the Kohanim duchen, when they raise their hands to bless Klal Yisrael, you're going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. You're certainly not the Kohen Gadol going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and it's nowhere does it say that it's like shofar, that shofar kevon de lezikaron kaasi kilifnim damya. So how then can the Gemara, or was it Taisus? I'm not sure the Gemara or Taisus use this terminology. The reason why a Kohen who murdered someone is not allowed to use his hands because ein kategor nase Sanegar. There is no, that's only in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Doesn't make sense. So you have to say one of two things. Either you have to say a very wild drush, that in a chanami, bracha, when you duchen, is kilifnim damya. It puts duchening in an entirely new light. When Kohanim, they duchen, they're doing avoda. We learned yesterday when the Kohanim duchen, it's a form of prophecy. These are the words that Hashem has commanded the Kohanim to say. Nivsef osayim. That's why we are mespal. We say the Ribbono shel Olam to mevatel chalom ra. A chalom ra is also a form of prophecy. We have a good prophecy, mevatel a bad prophecy. It's a form of prophecy. A prophecy all emanates from the holiest of holies in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It takes a whole new idea when you go and you're standing before the Kohanim and they duchen. You have to realize you're in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It's an amazing idea. It's a chiddush to say such a thing. However, there's a much simpler answer to this question, and that is this principle of Kevan de Lefnim Damya, Kevan de Lezikorin Kaskin Lefnim Damya, is only when you're not using the actual object that was a kategor. If today someone will take a shofar and plate it with gold, the gold that's been used to plate the shofar is not the same exact gold that was used for the eagle. The gold that was used for the eagle has been dispersed somewhere in the desert. It's not to be found. It does not exist. So gold is just symbolic. I have gold. This gold was quarried, I don't know, from somewhere. Who knows where it came from? But it didn't come from the desert. It's not the same gold. Oh, but all gold is similar. If I'm going to use this gold, it's going to remind us of the gold of the eagle. And the eagle is a kategor. Oh, so when you're already one step removed from the real deal, then the only time it's a problem is if it's lefnim in the Kodesh HaKadoshim mamish. The gold that the Kohen Gadol wore on his clothing when he went to the Kodesh HaKadoshim is not the same gold of the eagle. So then, since he's going to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it's already a problem. But when you're dealing with the actual object, that is the kategor, we apply the principle of ein kategor nas sanegor even l'chutz. So hands, a person's hands that caused the loss of life, they themselves are the kategor. It's not a dogma, a zecher, a remembrance. They themselves are the objects that cause the loss of life. So here we apply the principle of ein kategor nasa sanegor, even though it's outside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it's in Chutz Liaretz, it's in the Beis HaKnesses, it's still a problem. Okay, this is the topic from yesterday. I want to conclude that. I want to discuss another very quickly, a short topic that relates a little bit to this week's parsha. In this week's parsha, we learn about the sota. We learn about domestic strife, domestic problems. Husband suspects his wife is not loyal, faithful. He takes her to the Beis HaMikdash. We have a problem, a dispute between a husband and wife. So I want to discuss an halach from Rabbi Baruch Simon. Rabbi Baruch Simon in his new sefer, Imri Baruch, on Toikif HaMinig BaHalacha. He has a fantastic chapter on situation of strife between man and wife in regard to Minhagim. An Ashkenazi marries a Sephardi. So the Sephardi, she brings into the home all of her Minhagim. Husband says, what in the world is this? What in the world are you doing? Someone has German yichus, only wait 3 hours between meat and milk, or 1 hour, and you come from a family where they wait 6 hours. What do you do? Who wins? Does the wife win? Does the husband win? And it's not always a solution to follow both, because it can cause too much confusion. You're sending the wrong message to the children. There's a lot of issues. And many times you have to accept one practice. So what happens when there is a marriage, and in the marriage there are different minhagim? Who wins? The husband or the wife? So we have here a chapter in the Sefer, and basically everyone seems to agree, derech klal, the husband wins. But the question is why, and there will be nafka minas. So first he quotes from a Tashbetz. Tashbetz, I believe, is one of the Rishonim, one of the later Rishonim, if I'm not mistaken. And he says, the husband wins, and he brings a source for this. And he explains the reason why the husband wins is because a wife enters into the Rishus, into the domain of her husband. And that's a very important term, into the reshus of her husband. And its primary source comes from the laws of Truma. If a Kohen marries a Yisraelis, so the Yisraelis goes up, she moves up, and now she's permitted to eat Truma. So what do you see? Her status changes to becoming a Koheness. She's allowed to eat Truma. Ad kidei kach, that if she has children with her husband and her husband dies, she continues to eat truma because of the children. This is what it says in the Torah. The only time she loses her rights to eat truma is if her husband dies and there are no children. Then she returns back to her father, even if she's an adult. Then she no longer has the privilege of eating truma. It's clear in the Torah that when there's a conflict between the wife and the husband, in the halacha list of truma, the wife enters into the reshus of the husband to eat truma. So he says that sets the stage for all other customs. When a woman gets married, she comes in. You can put aside all of the conventions of the 21st century of who's in charge, who wears the pants, literally. You can put all of that aside. The rule is, the woman is coming into the husband's home. She takes his menhagen. Okay, it seems very simple. Gebrochst, it comes to kidneys on Pesach, waiting 3 hours. Now, I'll discuss one area that is a little bit more complicated because it does not apply to a man, and that is Taras HaMishpacha. This is a topic to itself. I'm not familiar with all the details. There's a lot of complicated details, and it's a very big sugi, very common. That's really one of the major issues is that in Taras HaMishpacha, when a woman goes to mikvah, before counting the Zayin Nikiyim, there is a delay. It's not like in the Torah where you just count right away. A woman is a nida, she waits Zayin Nikiyim. She has to have a Hefsek Tara. And the rules of Hefsek Tara can be rather complex. And there are different minhagim between Sfardim and Ashkenazim in certain situations. And even among the Sfardim, there are different minhagim. So this has no relevance to the husband. Husband is a man. Males have nothing to do with Taras HaMishpacha. It's the woman's domain. The woman has been trained by her mother. By her mother taught her in a traditional family, the mother teaches her. If she is a Svardi and she's marrying an Ashkenazi, husband doesn't even really know what's going on. I don't know, he probably does know what's going on, but he doesn't know the extent, the degree of the various customs. One thing, when you're talking about eating meat, you're waiting 6 hours. Is dinner on the table or is dinner not on the table? Okay, it affects the husband and the wife equally. Eating kidneys, are you not eating kidneys? Okay, eating gebrochst, are you not eating gebrochst? Are you going to wear a kittel at the Seder? You're not going to wear a kittel at the Seder. These things are, they affect both. They affect the family. They affect everyone together. But when it comes to Taras HaMishpacha, these are Dvarim Shebetzina. It doesn't really affect. So this is already... It's a different equation, so that we leave. That's a different topic, just to be aware of. That's already a little bit more complicated. But let's discuss things which are much more in the open. Eating kitnios, eating gebrochst, eating meat and milk. So the Tashmit is a very simple halacha, nothing to talk about, and we learn from the Torah. Okay, along comes Rav Moshe Feinstein, and he has a very big chiddush, and there be a lot of nafkunis lahalacha, and he says, he compares it not to the law of the Torah, because there are problems. Truma may be its own unique halachas. You can't necessarily use Truma as a benchmark for, as a model for everything else. He compares it to a situation that says that's discussed in the Gemara at length, where a person has a minhag, a man has a minhag, and he lives in one community, and now he moves to a new community for business, for family, whatever it is, and he leaves. He leaves his old community for good, and he becomes a member of the new community. The halacha is he has to abandon all of the old minhagim. He abandons the old minhagim, and he has to take upon himself all of the new minhagim. That's the law.
What extent?
100%.
Example, a guy who lived in a community that had only one shul, which was Ashkenaz.
Okay.
And he moved to a community with one shul.
Okay, it's a bit difficult today. Today it's very difficult because today we live in the
place where there's one. He's coming from a one shul.
No, you have to change. If you live in a shul where you're Ashkenazi and you come to a community where everyone are Sfardim, you have to abandon all of your old menhagim and accept upon yourself all the new menhagim.
Well, what about
what I said is not necessarily true, because I'm going to show. Let's hold it for one moment. Your question, an excellent question. I'm going to come back to it. But let's talk about a minhag, a custom. Let's give it for example, not working on Tisha B'Av. Your example of Sfardim Ashkenazim, that's not only a minhag, that's even an Eda, which we're going to come to that the Nafkamin in one moment. There's an Eda and there's a minhag. Let's talk about a custom of waiting 6 hours. You live in a community where everyone waits 6 hours. You come to a new community, we only wait 3 hours. That's it, it's over. Give it up. give up the 6 hours, you now take upon yourself 3 hours. You don't want to have more than one minug. We're having more than one minug is a problem of lo sisko to do, and it's hard for us to relate to this in this modern day and age, because today everything is a big melting pot. Everyone does whatever they want to go want to do. But let's say you have a strong sense of community and it's a pure minug. Are you allowed to work on Tisha B'Av? Shulchan Aruch, it's a minug. Some have the minug, they do work. Some have the minug, they don't work. So you go from one community to another community. You have to abandon your old customs and take upon yourself the new customs. If you're planning on going back, I'm only here as a visitor. Oh, so then you have to accept upon yourself the chumras of the old and of the new. That's a separate halacha. So Rav Moshe says an incredible chiddush. It's a very beautiful idea, and it's possibly the only place that this has real application in the Zman Hazeh, is this concept of going from a place where there's one minig to a community where there's another minig. Is exactly what happens when a woman gets married. She was by her father, by her mother, she was in one community with one set of minhagim. When she comes into her husband's home, she has to abandon her old minhagim and accept upon herself the new minhagim. Okay, that's how Moshe learns. Is there a nafkamina? So far, there's no nafkamina. Here comes the big nafkamina. Eating, one example, one specific example, eating kitnios on Pesach. Are we allowed to eat? Are you a woman is a Sephardi. Her family, they eat kidneys. She marries an Ashkenazi where it is his custom not to eat kidneys. Is she allowed? Does she have to change, or can she be lenient, or vice versa? Let's see the other way around. So he says this idea, this concept, this halacha minog of eating of not of. Eating kidneys is a machlokes between the maril and the smak. Is it a minhag not to eat kidneys, or is it a gezeira on the eda of Ashkenazim? There's a very strong difference in the terms used by the earliest sources on when this custom came about. There are different reasons why we don't eat kidneys, because kidneys, the most simple reason, it was planted right near the wheat fields. And every so often, some kernels of wheat would get mixed into the kidneys. There are another 10 other reasons, but that's just one of the reasons. There would be some mingling. So it was decided in earlier times by the Ashkenazim, there's a new chumrah, no eating of kidneys on Pesach. Oh, that's the very big dilemma, which is not clear. The Maril clearly says it's nothing more than a custom. The term is a minhag. The Smak says it's not a custom. It was a gezerah on the Adas Ashkenazim, on the Eda. If you're part of the Eda of Ashkenazim, there was a gezerah enacted. A gezerah is a very harsh term, and there's no way out of a gezerah. It's not a lightweight minhag. So now along comes now we have I don't know if Rabbi Baruch Son is saying this, but I think he's saying this in the name of someone else. Is I think he brings from a thing called the Admas Kodesh. This is a very big nafkamina between Rav Moshe and the Tashbetz. According to the Tashbetz, when a woman comes into the home, she enters into the reshus of the Baal. She becomes subsumed. She becomes part of the husband. It doesn't make a difference. She's part of the husband. She has to follow all the laws. She's part of a new Ada. If it was her custom to eat kidneys, that's it. No more kidneys. That's it. It's out. But if you learn the prohibition of eating kidneys or not eating kidneys, it's not a gezerah. It's a din of a minhag. I made a mistake the other way around. Well, let's say it like this. Let's say the woman was an Ashkenazi woman, and she was part of the Eda that did not eat kidneys, and she's marrying a man who's a Sephardi who does eat kidneys. According to Rav Moshe. So what would she normally do? She would normally take upon herself the minhagim of her husband. She would take upon herself the new leniencies. Abandon the old, take upon herself the new. But that's only true with regard to minhagim. Eating kidneys, according to the smak, is not a minhag. It is a gezerah. If it's a gezeira, it does not fall in the framework of Rav Moshe's understanding of what happens when you get married. When you get married, you abandon minhagim. You don't abandon your edah. My blood is Ashkenazi blood. No, but Rav Moshe does not reject that principle. You can't use truma. The Tashbetz is working with a principle called a reshus. You're entering into a new domain, like truma. Oh, so until now I was an Ashkenazi, I'm now married to a Sephardi, I become a Sephardi, I have now become into a new Rishus. I do what the Baal HaBayis does in this Rishus. But if you learn that the lumness of changing customs is not because of entering into a new Rishus, it works with the framework of changing locations with regard to Minhagim. That's if what you're doing is a Minhag. But if what you're doing is a Gezeh from an Ada, just because you come into the Rishus of your Baal doesn't mean you change the Gezer that was upon you from where you've come from.
It's yeah.
Some Slavim hold from the area of Slavim. That's clear. So if you're an Ashkenazi, young lady, you grew up and you.
Okay, you're asking a very good question. You're touching upon a lot of things. So what is an Erev? Until now, you were following a Psak Halacha. You were Psak Halacha from a Rav. It's certainly an Erev, certainly does not fall into the category. You're discussing a third category. It's not a Minhag. No, he's saying something very good. It's not Minhag. It's not a Gezerah. It's a matter of Halacha. Who is your rabbi? Who is your rabbi? L'chora, that would fall that until now my rabbi was so-and-so, and my rabbi said that it's mutter. I'm now married to a man, and my husband, in matters of halacha, we follow. I would assume that this would be you follow the husband. Generally, you always follow the husband, generally. But here we have one very specific nafkamina with regard to kidneys, because kidneys goes back who knows how long, and the terminology used by the smack versus the naril, is it a din minhog or is it a din of gezerah? Erev is a new category, halacha category. Halacha lechor always follows the husband. But kidneys, if it's a minhog, then you follow Rav Moshe. Of course, you change minhogim. But if you're following a gezerah, it doesn't work with Rav Moshe. Only if you follow like the Tashbetz will you change. But if you don't go with the Tashbetz, you only work with Rav Moshe, there's no need to change. Keep on doing what you were doing. The husband, he will not eat, will eat kidneys, and the wife won't eat kidneys.
That's the children.
They'll be all confused.
Right.
The children, lechora, they follow the father.
So what is she cooking?
Generally,
she cooks in separate dishes?
Yeah, she cooks in separate pots. For her husband, she'll cook this, and for herself, she'll cook this. Or kidneys, the kalim are not a problem. Kidneys, we don't ask for kalim for kidneys. You only don't need the achila, but there's no din blias for kidneys.
There's a story where Rav Yaakov, that he was a young man, he lived at someone's house, and he really...
Toronto, he took on a poster. That's just why he took on a poster, not even kidneys.
There are chumras, and then there are nedarim, there are other mishkim. One last point we'll stop is, this is a very common occurrence of making an early Shabbos. Making an early Shabbos, the husband comes home from work, he wants an early Shabbos, so he goes to shul, it goes 7 o'clock, he comes home at 8 o'clock and he sees that his wife is still vacuuming. TV is on. What's going on? Husband says, I was Mekabel Shabbos. I'm Mekabel Shabbos. You have to be Mekabel Shabbos as well. You have to be Shabbos. You have to follow the Minhagim. So Rav Moshe says, no. Because Kabbalah, the Moshe really says, is a chilek. It depends on why is the husband Mekabel Shabbos early. If he is Mekabel Shabbos early for convenience purposes, I'm hungry. I'm tired. It's been a long week. I want to get an early night's sleep, and I'm hungry. Convenience? This is not a matter of halacha. This is not a matter of minhag. This is not a matter of din. It's convenience. Nothing doing. What's convenient for you has absolutely absolutely no effect on what's convenient for your wife. Convenience, the wife is not dependent. But here's what he says. He says that, I don't think you'll find this, today, but if you're in a community, I don't know, where they're makabel Shabbos early out of honor of Shabbos, covenant to give it, people are being mechal Shabbos. They're coming home late from work, so they will masakin. Everyone's going to start Shabbos a half an hour early. You hear about such things every so often in order, because something's going on in the community. We're all going to be mechal Shabbos a half an hour early. Twist for Shabbos. For 6 months, we're going to be moisef mechal lakodesh. This is the gezera of the rabbanim in this community for 6 months, to be mechazek Shabbos midin halacha, to give kedusha. And the husband comes home and he follows the rules, and the wife says, you know, sorry husband, I'm just too tired, I'm not ready for Shabbos yet, I'm going to do what I want, it's not convenient for me, but the husband is being mekabel Shabbos early, not midin convenience, he's being mekabel Shabbos midin kedusha Shabbos. He wants the Shabbos to start early, then the husband has to follow. What?
If he does that regularly, he has to be matanedah if he wants to change it.
Possibly, if he wants to change, possibly, yeah. Possibly. So it's a very big nafkamina. If a husband is a real religious, very firm person. What? Right. So let's say the wife says, I'm not my minhag, not what I want to do. No, you have to follow the husband. This is halacha. This is not just seeing, this is whatever it is. It could be, it doesn't make a difference. Halacha is the best, because halacha works even according to Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe says, minhagim, certainly you have to follow your husband's minhagim. There's nothing to talk about. But coming into your rishus, a rishus, that's the tashbetz. The only question was a gezerah. If a woman was under a gezerah from an eda, from a community that should, before she came, then according to Moshe, but when it comes to Kabbalah Shabbos, it's either halacha or it's a minug, and if it's being done for Kedusha Shabbos, the wife is required to adhere to the husband's custom. It's only if the husband confesses, I'm not so religious, I'm just hungry, I'm practical, I don't want to wait until 8:20 to daven mincha. I want to daven 6:30. We can daven already. Mincha at 6:30. I can have the supper on the table at 7:30. The wife says, "So you take the food yourself. I'll make kiddushin myself." Call her. She could do whatever. That's she. 100% within. If he'll go to a din Torah and say the shalom bayis, the wife wins. The wife can say, "I'll do whatever I want, and you'll do whatever you want for convenience." But if the husband says no, we'll be makabel Shabbos early because we want to give it kedusha. I won't even eat. I'll show you what, my wife. I won't eat until 10 o'clock. But I'm being makabel Shabbos early, and I'm going to sit and learn. I'm going to sit and learn for 3 hours before we eat because of the kedusha Shabbos. So technically speaking, okay, it's not going to be good for Shalom Bayis, obviously, but technically speaking, the wife is mechuyev to follow along with the husband because this is a halacha, or this is a minhag, kedusha, and she's dragged along, l'chol hadeis. Yeah.
This concept of eider.
Yeah.
If I decide to buy a house or an apartment on Bennett Avenue, I now wait 3 hours.
L'chor not. Because today there's no such thing as an eider today. I don't think that today in Bennett, if you walk into Washington, if you walk into Broyers, you'll probably have a lot of people there who are not real. They just happen to live there in Washington Heights.
No more yet.
There's no more. We don't live in a world today where there's a strong sense of community anywhere.
Okay.
It's the big. It's even Elizabeth. There's also breakaway minyan. Yeah, it's still tight.
All the breakaway minhag, the minyan, he goes from shul to shul. They have to have a chair. I mean, demands it. And he sets times to smile. You can't start a minyan at 6 o'clock.
Okay,
it's
an uphill battle.
Who's Elizabeth?
Well, the lechatchila, they make multiple minhag. It's convenience also. It's not halacha. The vast majority of the early minyanim in this neighborhood are purely for convenience.
Yes, absolutely.
For children, for the adults. It's no one is so machmir, oh, Shabbos Kodesh.
The wife can vacuum.
The wife can vacuum, yes.
I'm sure Rabbi Almond said this. I think I remember saying that
The man can start early, but the wife should have lit candles when he comes home, before he comes home.
It's like the zilzul of Shabbos. Yeah. It's a chumra of zilzul of Kedusha Shabbos. But technically speaking, he can force her. He can, according to halacha, force her. She can do whatever she wants. Unless he's doing it mishum kavod Shabbos. Shabbos mamish. That is what Rav Moshe says. That's the chilek he makes in early Shabbos. Okay? We'll stop here.